in contact. Please share your feedback on Facebook or Twitter. Don't miss our news. You know, you can sign up for our updates at our website at radioproject.org. Again, thanks for listening.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Good evening. You are listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Transpositive is a show that upholds the dignity of transgender lives and the lives of non-binary people. Tonight, we're talking with Janet Unruh. We're going to be talking the first part in a couple of series on how do people who are transgender view their gender identity, and how do people who are cisgender view their gender identity, and how do we compare those experiences, and what's behind all of that. So we'll be talking about that tonight. My name is Emma. I use she and her pronouns.
My name is Jean. I use she and her pronouns as well.
And I'm Janet Unruh, and I use she and her pronouns as well.
Thank you. Janet is a friend from KBOO. So I'd just like to introduce you, Janet, and ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
I got to know Emma during a protracted struggle to actually recover KBOO, to bring it back, last summer. Overjoyed to really get to know the many more of the KBOO people through that whole experience. I'm retired, but I guess you could say, well, my official profession is called instructional design. And so what that means is that I create training programs for pretty much any circumstance, but of course it's been mostly corporate type experience. How about that?
And how do your experiences, Janet, lead you to kind of, well, not the experiences that you just were describing, but how do your experiences as a child growing up into an adult lead you to your understanding of what gender is?
As a kid, I was interested in bows and arrows and like stringing up lights around the basement and things like that that may not be exactly playing with dolls or something. And so I felt very tomboyish, I guess you could say. And in teenagehood, I had the great experience of going to a free school, and that was very supportive as well. And I learned how to do repairs on cars and things like that. So I had a very non-traditional experience as a kid. How's that?
Oh, that's great. No, so your experience was non-traditional. When you talk about, you like to, for instance, use bows and arrows, but you also like to put up Christmas lights, or lights in your basement.
Like replacing the normal lights, you know.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Could be a little annoying for others.
Thank you. Thanks for clarifying that, because that's what I heard. So, yeah, so you enjoyed also doing things around the house that had to do with house maintenance. So all the things that you describe are things that maybe like in some time in the past were viewed by people of that generation as either masculine or feminine.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds like you're saying that you, as a child, like some of the things that would have been ascribed at that time to being masculine.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Go ahead, Jane.
Emma, you introduce an interesting and I think very important perspective there just a moment ago, and that is a generational experience. I think it's probably worthy of us, you know, sharing really kind of, you know, what our context is for this conversation, because I think we all, I'll just say for myself, I mean, I grew up in the 1950s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you some idea of, you know, the context for my experiences. Janet, when did you grow up?
Yeah, I was growing up in the 50s and 60s also. I was in junior high in the early 70s. And so the women's lib movement had a very profound effect upon me, and I really felt that it was something that we needed to start walking into as a society.
That's so interesting. So do you think that we've moved forward in terms of women's rights since then, or do you think we've regressed?
Actually, well, women's rights, I don't see any real progress per se. I think that I saw a recent statistic saying that women are still making, maybe it's gotten up to 80% of what a man earns for the same work. So, I don't know, that's not much. Gee, over a lifetime? Come on.
Yeah.
And the other thing I note is that I'm discouraged about is kind of the return to a lot of revealing clothing and a lot of makeup. Because to me that is selling yourself in a superficial way to a man's world, you know. And that I see as a regression, you know, into the past that we wanted to get free of.
Do you see ways in which we've moved forward as a woman?
Some. It's also been, I think, studies or statistics have been collected showing that more women are earning advanced degrees than men. It's going to prove to be interesting in the times to come, let's hope. So that's an advancement for sure. I mean, education is, you know, key to advancement.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Janet. That's really interesting. So the reason that we're having this conversation tonight is that there was a Facebook thread that I had posted a few months back where I asked the question, what do I have to do to be accepted as a woman? Do I have to have surgery? Do I have to take hormones? Do I have to change how I speak? Do I have to have a uterus? Do I have to give birth? What do I have to do? Do I have to do the dishes? I mean, what do I have to do to prove that I'm a woman? Is it enough for me to just say I'm a woman? Because I'm always feeling incomplete. I always feel like no matter what, I'm an imposter. And so that led me to posting on Facebook. And what I discovered when I posted was that a lot of women go through the same experience. Even though they're already women, and they don't have to do what I did to my body to become a woman. Mm-hmm. But so they're already women, but they have the same problems I have, which are, what is good enough? You know, do I have to diet? When am I old enough to stop worrying about what men think about me? Especially considering I don't even like men. Why is that even in my head?
Yeah.
So these are some of the things. And then a whole bunch of women responded. And I asked two of them to do shows, and you're one of them.
Okay.
And then we're going to do another show in 2 weeks with another friend.
Yeah.
A cis woman who's actually married to a trans woman.
Oh, cool.
So it's just tonight is a chance for us to have a conversation about what does gender identity mean to us? Mm-hmm. And why is it important? What are some of the privileges that cis women have that trans women don't have that we're not even aware of, you know?
Well,
and how do we have the same experiences? So what do you think, Jonah?
Did you say me? Well, I'll tell you one thing. If you don't have to have a period, that's a plus.
Yeah.
And
I've heard
hot
that.
Flashes lasted about 7 years. That was a real big pain. I was standing in my manager's office one time, and I just broke out into a sweat.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean a dripping sweat. I was like, oh, my God.
Trans women do go through something similar to menopause if they have to detransition and stop taking their hormones.
You know, I think that we all struggle with, and to me, I guess, I don't know, it's like, I felt so bad for one of our friends who went to the pharmacy and was, treated poorly. And I don't know, to me it's like, what is wrong with people who for some reason need to sort out the genders?
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think it takes a lot of courage to travel that road, and I'm very grateful for those who do, because it allows me to be more of who I am. We don't need to have people sorted out into two distinct groups. You know, that to me is not helpful. Because as I said before, you know, if I learn how to, you know, if I can change a tire by myself, I feel empowered by that. You know, I've had cases where I have a man running up and start giving orders, and I'm like, I know what I'm doing. You know, I don't need help. I really don't. And so, to me, you know, I think one of the questions is, what is liberation?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, liberation is being empowered up to a point where I can be self-sufficient in most situations. And so that includes some of the things that are traditionally, you know, given over to men, whether it's being able to make a lamp out of a piece of driftwood or whatever the heck it is. You know, and I can do that, you know. So I feel empowered by that. And that's, you know, I think that's something, you know, for all of us to strive for. And to, the other thing is, you know, how do we go about ignoring those social pressures that are pressuring all of us, whether we're trans or cis or what we are, to be something more or something that is just unattainable. You know, yeah, am I supposed to have surgery? Am I supposed to get my tummy tuck? Am I supposed to get my chin reduced? Am I supposed to get my eyebrows knitted? Or what the heck they do to them, or something.
Threaded.
I don't have eyebrows either. So
it's called threading.
Threading, thank you. Yeah. And there are some things that I might entertain, actually. I mean, it's not like you just let it all go, necessarily. But whatever it is I decide to do, I want to do it not for somebody else, you know, but for myself.
So yeah,
that's kind of my first take on that.
Yeah.
Emma.
That's. Go ahead, Jean. Sorry.
Yeah. When you were describing the Facebook post that you did several weeks ago, you made a statement. You know, so this is a rhetorical question. You said that you felt less than, or that you felt that way. So here's my question for you. Is it that you feel that way, or that you are made to feel that way?
I'm made to feel that way.
Okay, made to feel that way by whom? Whose acceptance are you seeking in order to have that affirmation?
Other women.
Other women. Thank you.
Oh, that's a real trip.
Yeah.
That's really too bad.
Other women. I mean, I feel like there's a way that women speak to each other that they kind of understand. And when there's someone that they don't think is a woman near them, they change and they speak in a different way. And I can always hear the change. And I can usually hear it, like, I can hear the difference in like how a woman treats me when she first knows me, and then how she treats me after she knows me a little while. And that's when I always hear the change from like, oh, you're one of us, to, oh, you're different. You know, I don't really know what you are.
Uh-huh. I'm uncomfortable. Okay.
You know, I kind of ran across that lately, and kind of, I wasn't really conscious of it before, but yeah, some people need to know, are you a man or a woman? And the reason they need to know is because then that determines how they're going to interact with you.
Right.
I just never have been oriented to that. That was like, oh my God, that is so retro, I just can't stand it. And I don't like it. I don't like it either. I don't like it at all. That's not part of who I am or how I see the world.
Yeah. And the question is, how do you deal with it? I mean, how do you navigate the world with that experience? And how do cis women navigate the world with their experience? You know, I mean,
I know that I could have been, I know that I could have done a lot more, but that I was held back because I was a woman. I did have some, you know, I worked in an engineering department, and it was quite interesting. I never would have made it through the math to be an engineer. But I had some very interesting assignments, and that was good. But I feel like I could have done more. So one thing is, it was a male, very much a male-oriented department. Everybody was nice. It wasn't that they were mean. But also the corporate, I learned a lot about the corporate life, which is that you don't necessarily get into better assignments or higher levels of management on merit. It would only be some, you know, to get into these, and not that I would want to either, now that I kind of know more. So it's a complicated situation. It's a complicated situation. I'd rather see, you know, non-hierarchical organizations. I think that would give more opportunity to everyone.
What about you, Jean?
Oh my goodness, you know, there are so many subjects woven into this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think you could do a whole year's worth of shows.
I think so.
On the questions that have already been raised. You know, I've done a little bit of reading over the years, and I do observe that you know, the answer is, it depends. It depends on who you ask. It depends in which context. It depends on what the objectives are for the association that you're in. And so I have two basic thoughts. First, I hearken back to the piece that, a couple of weeks ago, Janet, we had we were celebrating trans folks in the arts, and we had an author on, and she read a piece. Well, this was Kara's piece.
Oh, Kara, right.
About Rubens' vase. Okay.
Yeah, that is good.
That there are certain things that seem to be hardwired in our cognitive functions. So it's brain function, it's not socialization.
Yeah, you just see one or the other.
Yeah, you just basically see one or the other. And that applies with gender as well. And so it's not so much a question of whether you see someone as a woman or a man. It's what do you do with that information once that recognition happens?
Mm-hmm.
That's where the socialization kicks in. But the basic recognition happens automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated that piece that Kara wrote. I think it's very insightful. And then, you know,
she explained her facial feminization surgery that she had, the bit that she did have in relationship to that story.
And how much easier.
I'm sorry, can you say a little bit more about that? I wasn't clear on that.
Facial feminization surgery is the kind of surgery that trans women have to make their faces look more feminine.
Okay.
So they might move their eyebrows. They mm-hmm. might do something with their nose. They might mm-hmm. change their lips or okay. their cheekbones.
Jaw.
Or their brows, yeah. Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's really amazing. I mean, the difference is just incredible.
Yeah.
You know, I know several women here in Portland who have had the surgery, and it's very transformative.
Yeah, I have a friend who.
Just in terms of, Janet, just in terms of the way people see you, just you know, and it's and this recognition happens in milliseconds.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a conscious thing, okay. So that was that one piece.
Okay.
And then the other
piece. For me, it's like having surgery, having bottom surgery is to me what defines me as a woman. And that's what I needed.
Uh-huh.
But for some people, it's, you know, maybe it's FFS. Or for some people, they might have to have a baby. I don't know. It's different for everyone.
Yeah.
Some people, they don't need to do anything. Sorry, Jean.
Oh, no, that's fine, Emma. I, you know, like I say, there's so much woven into this. I know this is gonna go all over the place, this conversation. It has to. But the second observation I was gonna make, and then I would really like to hear Janet's perspective on it, is the nature of the feminine, and I think in kind of spiritual terms, you know, the divine feminine, that there are two basic, almost diametrically opposed energetics, a masculine energetic and a feminine energetic. And not to say that you know, that binary description covers the whole spectrum, because it doesn't. Everybody has some measure of both in their person or their spirit.
Yeah.
That's I think that's evident. Yeah. When you look around in humanity, it's becoming more evident every day. So with that preamble, when I think about women's lib, which is obviously almost like an archaic term now, but mm-hmm. You and I grew up in the same era, Janet, so
yeah.
You know, we both know what we're talking about, but that there is something that seems to be missing in that, by women expressing more male, classically binary male traits in society, economic, whatever, okay? Does that really equate to equality? I could have picked better words there, but or is it that feminine traits are so disrespect, I don't know, held in such lower regard? Misogyny. Mm-hmm. What I'm describing is misogyny.
Just like Janet's question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This would be a good time for you to ask your question, Janet.
Oh, wait a minute. Which one was it? Sorry.
The one that you asked your friend and they never answered.
Oh, yeah. I have a dear friend who I chatted with prior to our conversation tonight. And one of the questions, I said, you know, to her that, of course, you don't have to answer all my questions, and she didn't. And one of them was, okay, you're leaving the more privileged male end of this society and going into a less privileged or second class kind of existence as a woman. And so what was that like? And so she didn't answer, and so I don't know.
What do you think, Jane?
There are a few things that I did notice. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I guess I have to say that I guess I enjoy a fair amount of passing privilege. And Janet, what that basically means is, you know, generally I am recognized, you know, as a woman, at least initially. Like I think Emma was saying earlier, and then maybe as somebody gets to know me a little bit more, they'll start to figure out that I've got some other history. But the very first thing that I noticed was I could speak try to speak in a conversation with men, and it was like nobody could hear me. Actually, at the time, I actually kind of thought it was, you know, okay.
Yeah.
Affirming, but that's just an example, Janet.
And I know that sounds weird, Janet, but if you spent your whole life wanting to be treated like a woman and then somebody did, you might be happy.
Well, I was kind of wondering if there were some ill effects socially, you know, to training in the privilege, and mm-hmm. I imagine there are.
Well, you know, let me qualify something, Janet. For somebody like myself, you know, while on many levels, I have to admit that I did enjoy, not that I enjoyed it personally, but I had some sociological male privilege. Mm-hmm. Okay, the thing that most folks don't understand is I never fit. I never fit in.
Yeah.
So I never really experienced what it was to be male in this society.
Uh-huh.
Okay? I know that's a little hard track to follow, but mm-hmm. it's true. So I couldn't tell you exactly what it would be like to go from, you know, fully enjoying male privilege
uh-huh.
to not, because yeah. I never really had it.
Yeah. Okay.
And my experience is like, I know that there's a belief in the community that that's kind of what happens. And maybe it does to some people. I mean, I think it's a further kind of marginalization. For me personally, I don't feel like, well, first of all, I've never decided that I was going to accept a second class status. And I think that there's something about that that is, if you're internalized with that expectation of yourself from the time that you're very small, then you come to see yourself that way.
Okay.
And it's because you're treated that way. But if you were not treated that way most of your childhood and your adult life, and then you transition and you become that second-class citizen that so many people see, I don't think that in your head you're ever really there. I mean, I'm almost never really there. And when I see people do that sort of thing, I just think of it as odd behavior. Like, I just find that odd that you would behave that way. And I don't really understand it, even though it's exactly, that's its intent, is to evoke that sense that you're less than. So I guess what I'm saying is that people treat me that way, but I don't respond to it because in my head, I don't think that it's true.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So does it seem to, do you feel as though you are held back in any way?
Oh, definitely.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, in so many ways, except at places like KBOO. I mean, yeah. KBOO, KBOO actually values the voices of its trans and non-binary mm-hmm. programmers and really supports us, and the community supports us. So yeah. KBOO's values are very different from the values of the rest of the community.
Let me, so if you don't mind, I'm just thinking I'll jump in here with my little list of things that I feel empowered to do. So I feel empowered to go to school and to get an education. I feel empowered to travel anywhere in the U.S. that I feel like it. Some of that is a little bit of that, or a lot of it is white privilege as well. And I feel empowered to pretty much talk to anybody about anything. And to do even minor things like go camping by myself, to collect my books, I don't feel, in a sense, I know I've been held back and I could have done more if there was support for it, but on the other hand, I feel like at least in this culture, whatever progress Women's Lib has achieved, I feel like I'm taking advantage of it. I'm benefiting from it. I can get in my car and I can go anywhere the heck I want to, and talk to people. And I think that's kind of major.
That is definitely an evolution from the years when we were growing up. No question about it.
Yeah.
Do you think that those rights have increased or diminished in the past 4 years?
I don't see much change, actually. But being as a white woman, you know, I'm still kind of surfing on that privilege. You know, if I was a black woman, I don't think I would. I'd think it over very carefully.
What about regarding access to reproductive choices, reproductive health?
Oh, that was always a problem, I must say. And there were many times when I anxiously took the pregnancy test. And really wish that there could have been just like an on-off switch. It was a constant worry.
Yeah.
What about you, Jean?
Getting pregnant is not something that I ever had to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
I think that illustrates something that, at least in the context of feminist activism, okay? These are issues that tend to get thrown back at us as trans women. That
really? How so?
Yeah, most definitely, Janet. We have not lived a female experience.
Oh.
Okay, therefore we are not women, therefore we are not welcome in feminist activism.
Oh boy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's a very specific context. It's a very specific sociological, cultural context. It's not the general society, it's not the general context. But that does seem to be one of the primary places where this gets elevated to a division in a divisive issue.
It really is. It really can be.
And I know both, especially Emma and me somewhat, have been active. We are activists.
I wish it was easier that way.
Yeah, it's hurtful.
Well, I don't know if it's any comfort, but there are those women who don't want to reproduce because of the state of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, if we deconstruct this, there are plenty of women that, for whatever reasons, you know, health reasons, are, you know, not able to be to get pregnant. You know, that does that make them less of a woman?
Right.
That's basically the operative question.
But it's their choice, whereas right. For us, we don't really have a choice.
Mm-hmm. No, we don't.
And it's not that, you know, I'm not saying, oh, feel sorry for me, feel like I'm a victim because I don't have a choice. I'm just saying that's my biological reality. Mm-hmm. It may not be my biological reality in 20 years, but right now it is. So, but if I had a choice, I would choose to. I would totally choose to. So earlier, when you said I would be thankful for not having a period, or not going through menopause, I'm actually not thankful for that. I wish I had a period.
Okay.
And I mean, I do get to sort of go through menopause, but I wish I had a period. Because
yes, I'll second that one.
Yeah. So, okay. But I don't have that experience. So.
Yeah, that's true.
That's something that we don't have in common, Janet.
Yeah, well, I know there are some areas there where we do and don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me tell you, it was not fun. And there were times when it was quite messy and embarrassing or painful. And, you know, I was writhing in pain. And, yeah, it's, but I can also understand that you might want to have that experience. And I do have a son, so I did go through the whole experience. It was a bit later in life. It was when I was 36.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that was a reason, but I had to be hooked up to this machine when I was in the hospital. And I wasn't going to do it at home, to give birth at home. I just felt it was too risky. And it turned out that it was. I was hooked up to a drip where they dripped hormones into me so that we could get on with it, because it was just, you know, not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to get the chip in your backbone. I thought that sounded pretty bad for cutting out the pain. Take some pills, and then my mom finally gave me Tylenol 3, and that was what finally got me through the whole experience.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That all sounds like surgery.
yeah, it is.
That story reminds me so much of gender-affirming surgery. I can't even begin to explain, like, the overlaps. I'm just like, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But so you say most women wouldn't, like, you know, people don't really want to go through childbirth. People don't really want to go through gender-confirming surgery either. But we're both really happy with the outcomes usually.
Yeah. I have a friend that I knew her all the way through the transition, and I knew her from work. And so there are the work aspects to that, and then there are the surgery aspects. And she did pretty much everything, you know, that could be imagined.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the results are beautiful.
Mm-hmm. That's so nice.
Yeah.
So, Janet, when you think about trans women, what do you think about? I mean, do you think of trans women as women?
Well, yeah. I mean, here's my thing. So I'm not dividing the world into either or. And so to me, it's okay if there's a little touch of maleness in you, because there's a little touch of maleness in me. And to me, what I think about is the tremendous courage that you have. And I also think that a lot of trans people are more intelligent and sensitive than the cis people. And so I feel that you know, I'm a recipient of great benefit of having people, you know, who are trans in my life and in society in general.
That's nice.
Wow.
That's really nice. What about you, Jean? What do you think about all this? What are your thoughts about cis women, Jean?
Generally speaking, I have enjoyed pretty close to, you know, full acceptance. I mean, pretty close, okay? You know, earlier I alluded to, you know, having a certain amount of passing privilege. I don't know exactly where or how that comes from, but I guess I do. So I know there are others in our community that have a lot more issues around this question than I have experienced. Mm-hmm. Now, I anticipated having issues. I'm just saying they haven't manifested for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Not to the degree that I would have expected. But Emma, when I think about a lot of these questions, I can't help but go back to high school in my mind, okay? And think about the groups, the cliques, the hierarchies of that more simplistic expression, which really, as I look around myself, high school just gets, you know, projected out into, you know, the broader world. It becomes a little more complex, but fundamentally we're still dealing with high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the question becomes, you know, whom are you trying to fit in with, and why should you, you know, give it a bucket of rusty nuts what they think, right? I mean, if mm-hmm. I'm trying to, you know, try out for the you know, cheer squad or something, you know, in high school, that's a certain context.
Yeah.
Of expression and everything, but you know.
But what if you want a date? Does it matter then?
Okay. Now you're getting to something. Yes, it does.
Uh-huh.
It does. It absolutely does matter. You know, again, just like in high school, you know.
Boy, dating was a big deal in high school.
Well, it certainly was, but so who dated who?
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying? This whole projection of which group was of a higher value, right? Yeah. So, you know, socially or whatever.
I'd like to jump in on that too.
I mean, trans women commit suicide or attempt suicide 41% of the population. And the reason that trans women have problems holding jobs, they have problems finding housing, they have problems getting adequate health care. Yes, and the reasons for that are in part because this whole storm that rages inside of our heads about, are we acceptable enough? Do we pass? Does someone want to sleep with us? You know, mm-hmm. these really matter to us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they matter so much that they really interfere with the skills that we use in life to take care of ourselves. You know, that's how serious they are. And that's why for so many of us, it's such a challenge. So I think that makes us different from cis women in that sense. I don't think that cis women have the same kind of challenge with just accepting themselves. I mean, I don't think that 41% of all cis women attempt suicide. Okay. So maybe that's the way in which we're different.
Yeah.
But I think that the other question I was asking, which was like about, I earlier asked how do cis women view trans women? And then I was asking how do trans women view cis women? And I mean, I just want to answer for myself that I think cis women are amazing. They're goddesses. And I mean, I so admire cis women in so many ways. I mean, I'm so happy when cis women accept me and when they don't like question my gender identity. I love hanging out in communities of women. I love the kind of values that women have created throughout all of history. I love females as leaders, you know. I like strong women. I mean, these are all different kinds of women that I just admire so much. And most of them are cisgender. There's a few transgender women I know that I admire, but most of my heroines are just cisgender. So that's what I think about cis women. I think they're amazing. I don't know if cis women feel the same way about trans women, but maybe someday they will.
I'm hearing what you're saying about the signaling, and I think it also kind of, if I can tie in what Jean was saying about high school, and I was never in the in-groups. They just passed me by right away.
Me too.
And, you know, I've been kind of fat and ugly throughout my life, and I kind of like it in a way, as I know this might sound strange, but it has saved me from so much predatory advances, I think, which I feel fortunate for that. And if people can value me for who I am, I kind of, in a way, if you're fat and ugly, it kind of puts it out there, you know, can you see me for who I really am, you know, as a person? Can you see who I am, you know? And so I feel like I have a bit of an advantage in that area. But to go back to signaling, I've never been clued in on any of the signaling. But the only thing I've concluded in my lifetime is that if I didn't know what kind of signaling I needed to be doing to be included, then maybe I didn't want to be included anyway. Most of these in-groups are, you know, something that I can't understand what they're about anyway. And they're just so different, you know. I mean, it's like usually some kind of superficial stuff or just stuff I just can't understand. And I wouldn't have been interested. And it's not that I self-select out of the groups, that I'm rejected. And, but, you know, that I don't really mind. You know, it works out okay. They reject me, and because I didn't know the signaling, and I'm okay with it.
Wow. You're listening to Trans Positive here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we're talking about conversations between cis women and trans women, cisgender women, which is, cisgender is a term which means a woman who was born assigned female at birth, and also has like what society considers to be a female body. And transgender is people who change their gender in many different ways at some point in their lives. So Janet, we've only got about 5 minutes left. I can't believe that this conversation has gone so fast, Jean. Is there anything that we haven't gotten to that we can squeeze into the last 5 minutes? We've talked about childbirth, we've talked about gender affirming surgery, we've talked about we talked about coding and how we like kind of send codes when we're out. We talked about popularity. We talked about hot flashes and periods. So we've talked about a lot of stuff, but is there anything that we haven't gotten to?
Well, just speaking for myself, I feel honored to know the transgender women that I do know. And I find them quite interesting, and as I've said already a few times, very courageous, and I'm grateful for all that work that you've done, because it makes it easier to be who I am.
Wow. See, transgender women are so fabulous. If you know someone who's transgender, consider yourself lucky.
I do.
And blessed. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, Jean?
Well, actually, I want to ask Janet a question.
Okay, we've got about. Well, go ahead. We can edit it.
Janet, tell us how you relate in groups of other women. Do you just automatically feel the sisterhood, or is that something that is it a given? Or is that something that you have to deal with, struggle with in different settings?
I would say yes. I don't connect with women very well, actually. And like, I don't know the signaling and any of that. So I'm not interested in many of the same things. And I find myself being more interested in men sometimes, and depending who it is. for friendship and for discussion. And but whoever it is, I don't feel a sisterhood with women. They seem kind of a little foreign to me sometimes. What I look for in people are, you know, values and experiences and things like that. So I don't know. In general, if and I'm not trying to besmirch women, but if they've been spending their time on themselves, running around trying to become more of a woman, let's say, or doing things that are okay for women to do, you know, or I don't know, stuff like that that seems to be a bit more superficial in my mind, then it's hard for me to connect. And I just don't connect well.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That's so interesting. Well, we've got about maybe 2 or 3 minutes left, so I really want to thank you, Janet, for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for the invitation.
It takes a lot of courage to come on the radio, even though I know that you love KBOO, and I'm sure you've been on before, but, you know, to talk about things that are so personal to our identities and to be open to being asked questions by transgender people. You're really fabulous, and I want to thank you so much.
So are you.
Jean, do you have anything to say?
You know, I can't remember who exactly I'm quoting, but, you know, a woman isn't born, a woman is grown.
Yeah, that can be true, yeah. Uh-huh. We do kind of grow into women in a way. Well, this has been a really great conversation. I mean, it sounds like transgender women and cisgender women have a lot in common. I mean, we have so much in common. And not only that, but we really accept each other as women for the most part. So there's a lot of places where we fit in and we're accepted, and that there are a lot of good things that come from that acceptance.
Sure. And it's getting better all the time, Emma.
Yeah, it seems like it really is.
You know, it is. You
count on me for support.
Yeah, that's so nice. Well, thank you. Well, you've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO. Stay tuned next for Calculated Conversations, and come back in 2 weeks, and we will be talking about Nicolette's trans characters in the media. So thank you so much, and have a good night.
Thanks again, Janet.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, this is Emma. So we have a few minutes left in the show, about 5 minutes. So I would just like to share some transgender news for today, which is June 30th. And in the news this past week, the Human Rights HRC has put out Human Rights Watch has put out a report called "The Trump Administration Doubles Down on Transgender Discrimination," and it's an argument for why the United States should pass the Equality Act, written by Ryan Thorson. So I'd just like to share that since we have about 5 minutes left in the news. The Trump administration is moving ahead with a rule that would write transgender people out of sex discrimination protections in healthcare. While advocates fight for the rule in court, transgender people will continue to face discriminatory treatment and refusals of care. This comes despite a United States Supreme Court ruling last week that affirmed employment protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, reasoning that gender identity discrimination is a form of discrimination protected by law. Human Rights Watch has documented the daunting barriers that transgender people face finding healthcare services. Transgender people are often unable to find care, encounter discrimination or refusals in healthcare settings, or simply avoid seeking care because of concerns they will be mistreated. When the administration first proposed the new rule in 2019, Human Rights Watch joined thousands of other organizations and individuals in raising serious concerns with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Although it received more than 20,000 comments opposing the rule, HHS adopted the regulation, leaving transgender people even more vulnerable to the routine discrimination they already face in healthcare settings. The rollback of healthcare protections is the latest in a long string of Trump administration attacks on transgender people. Since 2017, the administration has withdrawn regulatory protections for transgender children in schools, fought recognition of transgender people under federal employment law, banned transgender people from serving in the military, rolled back protections for transgender people in prison, and threatened to cut off funding to schools that let transgender girls participate in sports. The administration's cruel assault on transgender rights shows no signs of letting up. Just after healthcare regulation was finalized, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development said it would propose a rule permitting single-sex homeless shelters to turn away transgender people. The Supreme Court's recent decision pulls the rug from under these anti-transgender regulations by making clear that sex as prohibited grounds for discrimination includes gender identity. Instead of waiting for the courts to strike them down, the U.S. Senate should pass the Equality Act, which would expressly protect transgender people from discrimination in employment, housing, federally funded programs, and other domains. As the past week shows, unless lawmakers take action, the administration will continue its campaign to deprive transgender people of their rights. And again, that was an article in Human Rights Watch written by Ryan Thorison called "The Trump Administration Doubles Down on Transgender Discrimination." So thank you so much for listening to Transpositive. This was the first in a series of conversations we're going to have between trans women and different people in the community. We're doing another show in about a month on transgender women and cisgender women sit down and talk to each other. We're also going to do a show, trans women and trans men. And we're also going to do a show, trans women and non-binary folks. Anyways, thank you so much for listening to Transpositive tonight. It's a real pleasure to have this time. And thank you so much to KBOO for opening up its airwaves to gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender programming. Thanks so much and have a great night. Yeah.
Is KBOO Portland.
1, 2, 3, 4. Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.